Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our health series by speaking with three people who overcame their food addictions. Over the last 50 years, the food environment has drastically changed, leading to an increase in loss of control eating, obesity, and diet-related disease, according to the American Psychiatric Association. According to a food addiction course they offer, there are major health disparities in these conditions, with under-resourced individuals and communities of color bearing more of the burden. Despite public interest in healthy eating, we as a society have failed to develop long-term solutions to successfully reduce excessive food intake at a population level. Scientific evidence has been building that the highly reinforcing nature of some types of foods can trigger neural and behavioral changes implicated in addiction. Approximately 14% of adults and 12% of children exhibit clinically significant levels of food addiction. So, what are the signs and causes of food addiction? And what are the most effective ways to deal with it, to heal and regain your health? Today, we're joined by Chuck Carroll, host of the Exam Room podcast from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Chuck Carroll is a former sports reporter for CBS and NBC, and so he is very familiar with radio. Hi, Chuck. Welcome to the show, and thanks so much for sharing your story with us.
Rose, thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. Adam Sudd is founder of Plant-Based for Positive Change. Their mission is to advance the understanding and impact of plant-based nutrition and addiction recovery, mental health, and physical health recovery. Hi, Adam. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for sharing your story with us today.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. Yvonne Dennis is a holistic radical transformation coach, a confidence mentor, and a whole body wellness practitioner. Hi, Yvonne. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story.
My privilege.
Well, I want to start off, before we talk about your stories, by talking about how you think we should talk about food addiction and obesity without shaming and blaming. Because yesterday we spent the hour on obesity and we heard from so many people with very interesting stories. And, you know, this is not an easy discussion to have. So, Yvonne, let's start off with you. Given that you work with so many people around a wide range of issues, how do we talk about food addiction without shaming and blaming?
Well, I think that one of the best ways for us to talk about food addiction without shaming is to focus on compassion for ourselves. Not just focus on compassion for ourselves, but also focus on information about the addictive nature of the excitotoxins that are in our food.
Right, because we've been doing shows also about ultra-processed foods, and there's a lot of science out now about how a lot of these foods are addictive and how these food companies hire scientists to make these foods addictive.
Exactly. That's where the bliss point comes in, and so much other information that most of us don't even know about. And yet, we're blaming ourselves. Others are blaming us, and most of us don't even have information about what's going on behind the scenes intentionally to keep us addicted.
Right. Adam, what are your thoughts? How should we talk about these issues without blaming and shaming?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that whenever you want to start to empower someone to take charge of a current situation that they're struggling with, the first and most important task is to help that individual make sense of what seems difficult, overwhelming, and confusing to them. So for the average person who's struggling with obesity and struggling with substance abuse, whether it be food or drugs or whatever it is dealing with something that they don't fully understand. They don't know that it's okay not to understand it. They don't know that it's okay to go up to someone and say, I'm not sure what's going on here, but it doesn't seem like my life is going in the direction I would like it to go. And I'm confused and I'm ashamed. And the reason for that is a lot of the times these situations are cloaked in some kind of stigma that generates shame. So I think that the first place to start is to make what they struggle with make sense to them. Help them understand that it is a reasonable response, not to biology and psychology gone wrong, but to more than likely for the majority of cases, it is biology and psychology gone right within environments gone terribly wrong. And if we can make it make sense to them, now it's no longer pathology and crazy and something inherently broken in them, but that they make sense, that their struggle makes sense, that there is a very practical and reasonable way to reorganize their life and their environment so that this struggle becomes less overwhelming over the course of time, and the opportunity to take advantage of a life that feels safe, secure, and hopeful is very possible. And so for me, I think that that's really where it has to start. Make what seems unreasonable make sense.
And you're speaking from experience because in addition to a food addiction, you also had a drug addiction.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, I will have 13 years of recovery in October this year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
What about you, Chuck? You talk about a wide range of issues around eating on your Exam Room podcast. How should we talk about food addiction and also the obesity crisis without shaming and blaming?
Yeah, I think Adam really said it very eloquently. And it makes me think of a conversation I had with a doctor who, when I shared my story with them, and this was after I had lost a lot of weight, you know, I've lost close to 300 pounds. The doctor looked at me and was like, well, you know, that wasn't your fault. And I, for the longest time, put the burden of my unhealthy body squarely on my shoulders. And I looked at the doctor so perplexed because I could not understand how anybody, let alone a doctor, could say that it wasn't my fault. But then as I started to peel back the layer of what was actually happening to my body as I was eating these highly processed foods, I was like, oh my gosh, this makes all the sense in the world. And so when I go out and I give talks in public now, I actually put a couple of images up on the screen that show how the brain reacts to somebody using cocaine and how it's identical to somebody struggling with their weight eating a donut. And so when you look at food having that much of a powerful effect on the brain, identical to using a narcotic like cocaine, that truly helps the person understand that it is not their fault. And therefore, you should not be ashamed. Essentially, you have been set up to fail since birth. It's just nobody told you about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where that compassion comes in that we've been talking about. And when it's not your fault, believe it or not, that is a very empowering feeling. Because the burden's no longer yours, that's when you can make up your mind to change because you know what you've been doing has not been working. It's not your fault you're in the jam that you're in, but you certainly now can take the steps necessary to make that radical transformation with your health, with your body, with your happiness, with the total picture. Because food addiction is about far more than just obesity and weight loss. There's a big health picture that comes with it.
And as you all know, this is such a difficult addiction because we are surrounded by ultra-processed foods. We've been talking about this for a few months. Even when you go into the hardware store, buying a hammer or nails, you're surrounded by cookies and candies. It's everywhere. So Chuck, for people who are struggling right now with either a food addiction or not being able to say no to the temptation, what would you say to them? Where should they start?
I would say take a deep breath and know that it's going to be okay. And you are going to get tempted, especially early on with every turn that you make. You just mentioned the hardware store. You know, obviously the grocery store. You can't go a block without passing a fast food restaurant. Food is literally everywhere. And we as a society have adopted this ideology that you can have a little bit of something and everything in moderation. And that just does not work when it comes to addiction, whether it's food or anything else. And when you start to look at a matter as serious as this, and I look at these ultra processed, high calorie, high fat foods the same way that I do drugs, and nobody's saying that, well, you know, go on the cocaine diet and wean yourself off and use it just a little bit. Like, nobody's going to say long-term you're going to have success there. Same thing with alcohol. Nobody's going to say go on a beer diet if you no longer want to be an alcoholic. Yet we set ourselves up with these foods. And so once we realize that food, a lot of it belongs in the same category as those traditional substances of abuse, that is kind of empowering. And so that gives us, with that knowledge, the ability to operate in more of a black and white world where there are no shades of gray, where there is, unfortunately, no moderation. And that's a hard message for a lot of people to understand. But once you just realize that those types of foods need to be put in that no-fly zone, that makes it easier for you to walk past it, and you're going to crave it and you're going to want it, but you need to trust that for the 15 or so minutes when that craving is going to hit, your life is absolutely going to be a disaster. But the more disasters you get through without craving to the craving, the stronger you're going to become. So trust that you are a super man, a super woman, and you have everything that you need in your tool belt to get through, and just give yourself permission to be uncomfortable as you're walking past those foods, but you absolutely can do it.
Hmm. Adam, what would you like to add?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think where people struggle with this is that there's a belief that there's a right decision and there's a wrong decision. And that if the right decision is made, then they are good. And if the wrong decision is made, then they are bad, right? And so I think it comes down to really, number one, kind of reframing the perception of what the relationship is that you have with your body. You know, I know what it's like to believe that your body is your adversary. I grew up living that experience up until I weighed 350 pounds and was struggling with substance abuse from drugs and food. And I know what it's like to try and get up every single day and try your best to outcompete your body through restriction, through overexertion, through self-harm, in an attempt to try to win a battle on the scale or try to win a battle with the mirror. And it's you might win a few, you know, little scrimmages, but you're never going to win the war. And I know what that experience is like. And then I know what it's like to actually take a moment, take a step back, and have an accurate perspective of what your relationship is with your body. So I'm a person who has survived suicide, and I remember being in rehab in a sober living facility, and talking with my sober living manager, and he asked me one day, what was it like? Let me ask you a question, Adam. Why do you think you didn't die? And to be honest, I don't think I wanted to have that conversation with him at that moment. And so I said the first thing that came to my mind, which was, I don't know, man, I guess my body didn't want me to die. And I'm going to tell you, as soon as I heard those words, I had that story that my body was my adversary completely dismantled. Turns out that my body wasn't my enemy, that in fact, everything that I had been through my entire life, the bullying, the self-harm, the drug abuse, the food abuse, the diabetes, the heart disease, every single thing that was difficult, that was an attack on my life, even when I tried to end my own life, my body never gave up on me. My body is the greatest ally I have ever had in my entire life. It has been fighting for me since the day I was born. And that my job now, if I want to do this thing, and I did in that moment, this was my time, was to not try to outcompete my ally, but to determine what are the priorities and values that allow me to make decisions that are an act of caretaking for a body whose entire purpose is to make sure that I survive. So when I am approaching an environment that is not my own, and that's the difficult part, that's what we're talking about right now. And in fact, we live in an obesogenic environment, an environment where the average calorie or caloric offering is unfortunately one that will likely lead you in a direction you want to go. And you have to know that when you leave your house. But if you have very clearly defined values and priorities for how you choose to care for yourself, when you look at a choice outside your home that is not in your control, you can very quickly say, it's not that that choice is good or bad, right or wrong, unhealthy or healthy. It just isn't aligned with my own set of priorities and values for how I'm going to care for myself from this day forward. It removes shame, it removes blame, it removes identifying yourself by the choices you make, but rather identifying your values and priorities with the choices that you have to make outside your home. And then how many choices are you going to make that look like the life you want to live? And if you can make the choices that look like the life you want to live 90% of the time or more, you get an A. Now, inside your home, I think it's very different. I think you should make your environment look like the life you want to live. You should take every opportunity that you have to reorganize the caloric environment inside of your home to look just like your goals so that you don't have to be confronted with those sometimes frustrating choices between what is aligned and what isn't aligned.
Wow, incredible story, Adam. Adam Sutt is founder of Plant Based for Positive Change. Yvonne, what would you like to add for people who are listening to this right now and struggling with these issues? What would you like to say to them about where to start?
Well, I believe that as somebody who actually recently relapsed herself, again, at the beginning of 2023, on the actual 3-year anniversary of bringing the world along with me, what I would say is ask yourself first, do you think that you're worthy of having a life that doesn't include feeling like this? Do you think that you're worthy of having a life that is free from these kinds of cravings? That's where I've been finding it's most important to start. Again, going back to the compassion for yourself and with yourself. Do you feel that you're worthy? What do you feel like you're worthy of? As I dug into that, when I relapsed back at the beginning of 2023, I realized that I didn't think I was as worthy as I thought I did. Mm. And have been continuing to do that work and gratefully become sober again, active recovery in October of 2023. But that's what I would suggest that you ask yourself first. Do you think you're worthy of having the kind of life that doesn't include refined food addiction and compulsive overeating? See what happens when you ask yourself that question. What answers do you get? If you're finding that you don't feel that you're worthy, then that's where you're going to start. If you do find that you feel you're worthy, then it's about choices. It's about information at that point. But what I can tell you is, for all the times that I have relapsed and found sobriety again, particularly after this time, not only is it possible for whoever's listening right now, not only is it possible, but we deserve it. Mm-hmm. We deserve the kind of life that has the kind of peace in it that means we're not miserable because we're caught up in addiction, we're caught up in a cycle of cravings that mean that we don't have 100% ownership of our mind, of our bodies. You deserve it. Mm. You deserve it. And there's a special kind of appreciation that I've been finding for sobriety this time around, protecting it, that I didn't have at first, that I've never had. And we're worthy. We're worthy of all having that. We're worthy of all having this kind of peace.
It's such a beautiful way to put it, Yvonne, especially in today's political climate, when people are just bombarded with so much news about what is happening. I mean, it's head spinning once again, and it's a tough time right now. And as you say, we're all worthy of peace. And one of the themes that has been coming up on these shows we've been doing about health and cancer and chronic disease is that it's hard to be active in your community if you're not healthy. You know, it's hard to be active if you're caregiving 24/7 and just trying to make ends meet and keep life going. So I really love how you put that, especially in these political times. That is Yvonne Dennis, a holistic radical transformation coach, confidence mentor, and whole body wellness practitioner. We're also joined by Adam Sudd, founder of the Plant Base for Positive Change. Their mission is to advance the understanding and impact of plant-based nutrition on addiction recovery, mental health, and physical health recovery. Chuck Carroll is host of the Exam Room podcast from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He is a former sports reporter. Chuck, Adam, and Yvonne have all overcome their food addictions. As Yvonne said, she relapsed and talked about how she dealt with that not too long ago. And this is a very serious issue. According to the American Psychiatric Association, about 14% of adults and 12% of children exhibit clinically significant levels of food addiction. So if you have any questions or comments for our guests, if you're dealing with this and you'd like to talk about your story, we'd love to hear from you. We are doing our best on all of these shows not to blame or shame. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Why don't we start by talking about your stories? And we've got just a couple minutes left before we go to break. Chuck, let's start with you. You've got this great website, theweightlosschampion.com, and you have a number of stories about what you have overcome. You've got one called My Diet at 420 Pounds versus 155 Pounds. This one, when I read this, I mean, this one is wow. At 400 pounds, I was spending almost $10,000 every year at Taco Bell. So you were also addicted to processed foods and also fast foods, Chuck?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, there was something special about Taco Bell that I don't know why, but I could not go a single day. There could be variety the rest of my day in my diet, but inevitably I would wind up at the drive-thru, and it got to the point where they just would see my car pull into the parking lot. My order never changed, and they just knew to start making it as soon as they saw that little blue Chevy Aveo pull into the parking lot there. And it was, "Hey, Chuck, do you want your usual $20? Please drive through." And, you know, it added up to, in one meal, it was so much food. It was almost 5,000 calories and more than 10,000 milligrams of sodium. And so every day between Taco Bell and everything else I was eating, it was literally 10,000 calories a day that I was eating. And I was so hooked on food, hopelessly hooked on food, that I honestly thought I was going to be dead before I reached the age of 30. Mm. Yeah, it's a very scary thing when the addiction is so severe you're having chest pains in your early 20s. But that's how out of control my diet was.
And you were actually fat shamed by a Taco Bell employee.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And this is I hate to laugh, but it was like such a moment. It's so shocking to me now. Was instead of saying, "Hey, $20, please drive through," one day I just pulled up to the order board, and the woman who was supposed to be taking the order just told me, "You eat too much." And I had been dreading this day. I had been absolutely dreading this day because I knew they were thinking the exact same thing that I was thinking. I would beat myself up with every single day is, "You eat too much, you eat too much, you eat too much." But I had a lie at the ready for this day. and without skipping a beat. I was like, oh no, this isn't for me. I'm taking this back to the office. We just all like to eat the same thing every day. And they knew I was lying. I certainly knew I was lying, but the lie was there just so I could feel a little bit better in the moment. But that made me angrier at myself, to continue with the theme that we have been talking about already today.
What do you think contributed to your food addiction?
One, I have been struggling with depression since I was a very little kid. And so certainly I always felt better when I would eat one of these fast food meals. But then two, I think I was physically addicted to it as well. There were times when I would try to diet and go without it, and I couldn't make it more than a day or two without starting to freak out and even become enraged and go through some of the symptoms that you hear people talk about when they go through a detox of, again, these more classical substances of abuse, whether it be drugs or alcohol. I would start to feel sick and get flushed and agitated and angry, and just I was not a nice person. I was miserable when I went without it. And so when you're physically hooked and you're depressed on top of that, you're battling stress, mental illness, all of that, it just drives you more and more and more to the very thing that's making you sicker, both mentally and physically.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Chuck Carroll, the weight loss champion, host of the Exam Room podcast from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He's a former sports reporter. We're also joined by Adam Sudd, founder of Plant Based for Positive Change, and Yvonne Dennis, a holistic transformation coach, confidence mentor, and whole body wellness practitioner. You can find out more about their work at KALW.org, click news, and then your call. If you'd like to join today's conversation about food addiction and how our guests overcame their addictions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Also, if you have a story to share, you can email your call at KALW.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we continue our health series by talking about conquering food addictions and regaining health. Yesterday, we talked about the obesity crisis. And then Tuesday, we talked about the overconsumption and health effects of ultra-processed foods. You can find those shows at yourcallradio.org. Click news and then your call. Tomorrow on our media roundtable, we're going to honor the legacy of media scholar and activist Robert McChesney, who sadly passed away on March 25th after a year-long battle with cancer. So sad. Just another reason why we are doing these shows about health, cancer, and chronic disease. Professor McChesney was a tireless champion for media democracy. So we're going to look back at his incredible life tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to join today's show about food addiction, we're speaking with three incredible people who have been kind enough to share their stories on today's show about how they overcame food addiction. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email from Philip who writes, "Remember the TV ad slogan, 'Nothing says lovin' like something from the oven'? My unscientific intuitive hunch is that we self-destructive food addicts are unconsciously trying to compensate for the sense of parental love that we didn't get. We're trying to fill in the hole of a bottomless pit. This is perhaps too sad to read on the air, but there it is. Thank you." Well, thank you for the email, Philip. There's so many reasons why people are addicted, and that is definitely one of them. So thank you for writing in. Let's hear from a caller, Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark. Thanks for holding.
When I work with patients, I make them listen to the end of overeating interview with David Kessler. David Kessler says, and he was head of the FDA for 8 years under Clinton. He was dean of Harvard Medical School. He was dean of UCSF Medical School. His pedigree is amazing. Fat, salt, and sugar are 8 times more addictive than heroin. That's 8 times more addictive. So I tell people, if you're feeding your kids mac and cheese, you're feeding them heroin. That's why people get stuck. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We had David Kessler on, and I remember on the cover of his book, he had a piece of carrot cake and then he had a carrot. And he asked people, what are your reactions when you see these things on their own and then side by side? Would you choose the carrot or the piece of carrot cake? I'll never forget that, because we had a really interesting conversation when he was in the studio. The End of Overeating by David Kessler. Thank you for the call, Mark. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we are joined by three incredible people who overcame their food addictions. Chuck Carroll is host of the Exam Room podcast from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Adam Sudd is founder of Plant-Based for Positive Change. They actually conducted the Infinite Study, pilot research exploring plant-based nutrition and treatment for substance use disorders back in 2020. It was the first study to explore how nutrition might influence early recovery outcomes. We're also joined by Yvonne Dennis, a holistic radical transformation coach, confidence mentor, and whole body wellness practitioner. Yvonne, why don't you talk about your story? In the piece that you wrote for Forks Over Knives, you write that you struggled with being overweight for most of your adult life. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Look, I'm sure a lot of people are able to relate to. It was a roller coaster. Any kind of diet you can think of, I tried it. Not understanding the toxicity behind the excitotoxins, the salt, the oil, the flour, alcohol, sugar added to the foods that I was eating, not understanding any of that. So it was painful. It was painful. It was painful. It was miserable. On that roller coaster ride of lose weight, gain it again, until I started getting information about overeating being a disease. Until I started getting information about these salt, oil, flour, alcohol, sugar being actually known as excitotoxins, and understanding that more as I dug in and researched, oh, wow. Okay. So the very nature of these things is to excite my brain and leave craving for more and more and more. And this is where the compulsive overeating comes in. So getting to that point where is I challenged myself at the beginning of 2017, as I was challenging myself to give up dairy once again, I'm really grateful for that time. I'm really grateful for that decision, because that was the decision that really triggered the discoveries, this part of my journey that people hear about in that story. That was really the turning point. Because once I challenged myself to not consume anything unless I actually fixed it from scratch myself, everything changed. For 11 days, January 1st through January the 11th of that year, 2017, I could not stop thinking about Lay's potato chips. But under no circumstances would I allow myself to go get them, because I did not fix them from scratch. So on January the 11th of that year, I finally went and I got those Lay's potato chips. As we know, bet you can't eat just one is the slogan. And I wanted to understand why couldn't I? Why could I not get them out of my brain? And the level of research that I embarked on after that is absolutely a grateful part of why I am where I am today. October of this year will be 2 years of active sobriety again since 2020. And I'm grateful.
Wow. Well, congratulations, Yvonne.
Thank you.
And it was interesting to read that you started researching what might be behind these compulsions, and you found The Pleasure Trap, a book by Dr. Alan Goldhammer and Doug Lyle. And in that book, you learned about the addictive nature of refined foods, and you also learned about calorie density.
Absolutely. Getting a chance to understand the concepts behind The Pleasure Trap and understanding the difference between, well, first of all, what calorie density is to begin with, and then what kinds of produce constitutes low calorie density versus high calorie density has been very instrumental in the way that this journey has been going for me as well.
That is Yvonne Dennis talking about how she overcame her food addictions. She's a holistic radical transformation coach, a confidence mentor, and whole body wellness practitioner. You can learn more about the work that she does at yourcallradio.org. Actually, it's KALW.org. Click on news and then Your Call. Adam Sutt is founder of Plant Based for Positive Change. Adam, your story is also incredible. You, as we talked about earlier, we're struggling with multiple addictions, serious chronic diseases, and mental health disorders. And your life nearly came to an end when you attempted suicide by drug overdose. Can you tell us about your story? And then also, looking back now, you were bullied. Gosh, I listened to an interview you did, and it really made me think about bullying. We need to do a show about bullying, because now you have social media, and that's taken bullying to a completely different level. But I just felt for you in that moment, just hearing about how much you had to deal with as a child. So can you take us back and talk about what really contributed to your addictions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it comes down, there's three words that I really like to use that kind of give a sense of where I was, where I ended up, and where I've come back to. Before the bullying, I had a relationship with myself, both physically and emotionally, that I was excited to show up and be present for every single day. I had bonds with other people in my life that felt safe, secure, and hopeful that I wanted to show up and be present for every single day. And I had a future that made sense and felt safe, secure, and hopeful. Those are the words, safe, secure, and hopeful. And as the bullying entered into my life, both physical, emotional, psychological bullying, verbal bullying, the feeling of being safe, secure, and hopeful in my life started to be severed. I didn't feel like I had any relationship with myself physically and emotionally that I wanted to show up and be present for every single day. Being present with myself physically was a very difficult thing. I had been, convinced that I should be very ashamed of how I look. I should be very ashamed. And that's how I felt. When I would go to school, I didn't feel physically safe, secure, or hopeful. Being present at school did not feel like something I wanted to actively do every single day. It also didn't feel safe verbally, so emotionally. And I always had the sense that while yesterday was going to be hard, it was going to be equally difficult, maybe even a little bit harder tomorrow. So my future didn't feel like a safe, secure, or hopeful place to be. Well, that is an appropriate breeding ground for depression and anxiety. Johann Hari, the British journalist who wrote the book Lost Connections, describes depression as a form of grief for your life not being as it should. That something has gone wrong and you are not being treated well. And as a result of not being treated well, you start to experience a signal from your psychology that says things do not feel safe, secure, and hopeful. It is not going well here. And that's an appropriate signal. And anxiety is like an alarm bell. It's letting you know that there's a sense that something coming up, whether it's 5 minutes from now, 5 days from now, does not feel safe. In fact, it feels threatening, and you should be aware. You should be very hypervigilant. We need to solve this problem. Unfortunately, in the modern environment, a lot of times you can't identify the problem. So you're overwhelmed with depression and anxiety. And as a result, these reasonable and appropriate signals create disorder in your life. And it was in high school that I was introduced to the drug Adderall. And the minute that I took it, it was as if the universe kindly whispered into my ears and said, "Oh man, you've got it figured out." Mm. Because I felt unbelievable confidence. All of a sudden, the people that were bullying me, beating me up, whatever, they knew that I had Adderall. All of a sudden, they started to treat me as if they were my friends. Now, they weren't my friends. I knew they weren't. But my gosh, it looked so much like what I wanted that I bonded with what I needed to do to get it. And what I needed to do was give them Adderall. All of a sudden, I could lose weight with ease and repeatability. That's unbelievably attractive to a person who believes that their body is a burden to them, that it's an unattractive thing to look at, an unattractive thing to live in, an unsafe and an insecure place to be. If I could fix this with ease and repeatability, oh my gosh, that's attractive. I'm going to bond with that behavior. All of a sudden, tomorrow seems like a place I'm excited to be a part of. I won't be as heavy tomorrow. I might have more friends tomorrow. I might be at a cooler party tomorrow. I'm now interested in my future in a way that I hadn't been in a long time. And so an appropriate bonding experience occurred between me and my substance of choice, which was Adderall. And it took me through high school in a very wonderful way. It worked for me until it didn't in college, because I'm not special. The trajectory of drug addiction for me is going to be the same as it is for anyone else. More became not enough became an ever constant problem until I ended up becoming a college dropout. I ended up, you know, being buying and selling drugs on the street. I was a criminal. I ended up needing a secondary addiction to fast food because I was running out of drugs so often that I needed something else. Chuck Carroll talks about his experience of going to the same Taco Bell every single day. For me, it was Whataburger. And I can remember getting to a point where, you know, it's this interesting thing where you know your life is going in the wrong direction, but you don't. And if somebody had come up to me, which they did a lot, and said, "Adam, what are you doing? What can't you see what is happening to you? Don't you know what this is going to cost you? Don't you know what this is doing to you and to your friends and to your family? Why won't you stop?" And I would have looked at that person and I would have probably yelled something really unkind to them and said, "You don't know what it's like. You don't know what my life feels like. You don't know how well this thing worked that I'm addicted to. You don't know how well it worked when I first used. So don't tell me that this stuff isn't a solution. I know what a solution it can be. I just need to get it back. And if this struggle costs me 10 years of my life, I don't care. I have to do life this way. Get out of my face." And I think about it now, you know, certainly as a person who survived suicide, and I think about, you know, the people who I love the most in the world, you know, what would they do? What would they not do for, you know, 10 more years with me if I had been successful? What would they not do for 10 more days with me? Mm. You know, I don't know what it feels like to die, but I do know what it feels like to believe that you're dying with a life full of regret. And I don't know if death is something you should be afraid of, but that is worth your fear. And I remember my journey into recovery as I finally reached out for help, and my parents, my family were waiting with open arms, which is a point of privilege. I completely recognize that I had a family that was willing to be there and love me regardless of my struggles. And I remember being in the doctor's office at the rehab hospital. And I'd just been diagnosed with advanced type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, erectile dysfunction, a whole host of psychological conditions. I was put on like 15 medications. And the doctors were saying, "Adam, listen, this is it. This is your reality here. Your diabetes is so advanced. We're going to put you on the highest dose of oral medication, but we're pretty confident you're going to be on insulin, you know, within the next year. And you have a risk of losing your eyesight, your hearing, limbs. So we're going to medicate you. We're going to do the best we can. But it's genetic. There's nothing you can do about it. You're class three. You qualify as class three obesity. Likely very much genetic. There's not much you can do about it. The data on weight loss is terrible, but you know, we're going to do what we can. Your cholesterol is over 300. Your blood pressure is 210 over 110. We're going to medicate you for both of those conditions, but you're looking at potentially having a cardiovascular event in the next 5 years. And Adam, here's the deal. If you want your life to get better, you have to stop using drugs. And I thought to myself, that might have been the worst prescription for change I've ever heard in my entire life. I had no idea that my future was that miserable, that my future was that difficult. And this doctor just painted a picture of a future that I have no interest in being a part of. And he said that this was going to happen with certainty. So what urgency now do I have to care about changing anything? Why would I ever want to give up drugs now? If anything, I should double down on my use. And I thought to myself, if I really want to do this thing well, I have to reverse engineer aliveness. I need to become the architect of a life that over the course of time would start to once again feel like such a safe, secure, and hopeful place to be that use would no longer be necessary. And I kind of got radical and fanatical about trying to figure this thing out. And you mentioned Doug Lyle. Doug is a very dear friend of mine, and I have the supreme privilege of being able to lecture with him at several events per year. And his book, The Pleasure Trap, was the fundamental moment of me changing my life. And it didn't happen in rehab. It happened in a sober living facility. And I remember watching his TED Talk. And after those 17 minutes had passed, I watched it again, and then I watched it again, and I watched it again. And I realized, oh my gosh, I thought the reason why I was constantly wanting to go and use again, constantly wanting to eat junk food in the sober living facility was because I was weak, because I had no willpower, no determination. I had no moral compass that clearly I was a failure of biology and psychology. I just, how else could you explain it? And after I watched the Pleasure Trap about five times, I realized that there are very real biological, psychological, and motivational mechanisms that are compelling behavior, and that they are driven by a neurotransmitter that we call dopamine. Dopamine is a very special neurotransmitter. It's a reward pleasure chemical. I mean, it's not just pleasure. That the pleasure, the excited euphoria that we experience is a signal to our psychology that whatever we have just done has statistically increased our likelihood of survival and reproduction. I mean, that's a good thing to do. This is exactly what you should be going in this direction. And in fact, in an environment that is appropriate to our biology and psychology, we are likely never going to run into decisions that will give us a pleasure response that goes outside of the bounds of what is appropriate to our psychology. We have a range of experiencing pleasure that's appropriate to our psychology, meaning it will always be just good enough that we will want more of it when we need it, but we will know when to not want any more when it's no longer valuable to us. However, as we've started to mess with the environment that we're in, as we started to introduce the modern environment into our lives, we started to introduce into our environment what we would call supernormal stimuli, meaning things that create a dopamine response that goes outside the bounds of what is appropriate to our psychology. And now, for the first time in human history, human psychology is having to make a decision, which is, when is pleasure a threat to our survival? We have never had to figure this problem out, ever, not once. And it confuses us. We believe that the higher the dopamine, our psychology believes the higher the dopamine, the greater the likelihood of biological success. So it must be the right thing to do. But as you continue to expose yourself to stimuli that give us a dopamine response that goes outside the bounds of what is appropriate to our psychology defends itself against this intense stimulus. It starts to dull your dopamine receptors. And as those dopamine receptors start to dull, there becomes a progressive narrowing of the things in the world that will give you a feeling of pleasure. And as that progressive narrowing continues over and over and over again, eventually all you're left with, the only thing that can give you a sense that you've done something well, are incredibly calorie-dense, hyperpalatable foods and incredibly powerful drugs. And that is when you end up in the pleasure trap. And that is the appropriate response. That is not you gone wrong. That is an environment gone terribly wrong. And you are never supposed to try to figure out this problem. So the solution is very clear. We don't try to will ourselves into the right decision. We have to rearrange the environment to look more like what is appropriate to our best interests. What is more representative of our natural history and our natural behavior? And I made it my mission to make my environment look exactly like that life. I talked about how when we got on the show, we kind of chatted for a bit. I said this morning, for like the last 11, 12 years, I had oatmeal for breakfast. I became very clear what my life was going to look like, what my choices were going to look like. And they were going to look like a whole food plant-based diet. And the interesting thing is if you start to expose yourself to foods, to choices that are appropriate to your psychology, you regain dopamine sensitivity. And so someone might ask, well, do you ever get it all back? The answer is yes. In fact, it's about a 4-month journey to completely resensitize your dopamine receptors so that healthy decisions feel really good. The interesting thing is that that's not a linear journey. In fact, what we know is that 80% of your dopamine receptivity comes back within the first 2 weeks of exposing yourself to choices that look like choices that are appropriate to your psychology, that are representative of your natural history and your natural behavior. So if you're willing to do this thing, if you make it so simple, so obvious, so repeatable, and interesting enough, it doesn't have to be the best meals of your life, but they've got to be interesting enough. It has to be something that, you know, I'll do it because I like it enough to do it. If you're willing to do that for 14 days, on day 15, those choices will feel completely different. Now, this isn't the end of temptation. In fact, there is no end of temptation. It is completely, it is not fair to yourself to say that there's a point where you never feel tempted again. That is not possible. You are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Your psychology is designed that way. But here's what you can expect.
And Adam, we're almost out of time.
Oh yeah, sorry. You can get to a point where a healthy meal looks good. You could put a piece of cake next to it and you go, my gosh, that cake looks amazing. But that healthy meal still looks really good. That's where you want to get.
Well, thank you for that, because we're getting emails from a few listeners who say that they are dealing with food addiction. One listener says that she just relapsed and she's in the middle of an intense relapse, struggling to turn over her craving for sugar. And she says she's going to look you up, Yvonne, and perhaps reach out to you for your support. So, you know, we're sending everyone thinking of you, because I know this is so incredibly difficult, and we'll definitely do another show about this because I think we just scratched the surface. Adam Sudd is founder of Plant-Based for Positive Change. Chuck Carroll is host of the Exam Room podcast from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Yvonne Dennis is a holistic transformation coach and whole body wellness practitioner. Find more information about their work, KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Chuck, Adam, and Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.